I'm Brian Russo, and welcome back to Coastal Connection. We're giving another listen to some of our favorite musical performances and conversations that we've had on the show in the past year or so. And in this segment, we'll bring you two artists. They've got different sounds, but they're working a similar path to success. Cliff Hillis and Amy Correa. You know that so-called dream of getting a major label record deal that most musicians have? Well, that's becoming less viable or even feasible in today's world. But that's not stopping music from being made or artists like Cliff Hillis or Amy Correa from making a living. Many artists are turning to fundraising sites like Kickstarter or Feed the Muse to get their audiences to help them finance their record. That's the case for both Hillis and Correa on their most recent albums. And the formula has been a smashing success. But once the record is made, that's when the grueling work begins. Because for a do-it-yourself musician, you aren't just a musician. You're also in charge of public relations, accounting, booking, and marketing. We'll hear from Amy Correa in just a bit, but let's start with Cliff Hillis. Hillis's music has been described as putting the power in power pop. He's played alongside some very well-known names in the music industry, such as Jeffrey Gaines, Rhett Miller of Old 97's fame, and Joan Osborne. We spoke with Cliff back in August about his new record, Dream Good. We talked about his ties to the region, and what it's like to be a musician that has to be promoting and pushing as much as you're performing and playing. Here's a bit of Hillis performing live in our studios. This is the first single off of Dream Good. It's called Keep the Blue Skies.
Become a different man, change my hair, change my heart and change the air, build a bridge in my mind to cross the river blind, walk among those with eyes and keep the blue skies.
Cliff Hillis, welcome to Coastal Connection. Thanks for being here, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So this record, this new record you just put out, Dream Good.
You know,
the wordsmiths in public radio will look at the name of this record and they'll say, that's grammatically incorrect. tell me where the idea for Dream Good and your decision and why you called it that.
Sure enough. Hey, I've already gotten in trouble with the grammar police for that. But I was searching for a title for this record and having a hard time finding something I liked that hadn't already been used, and came across Woody Guthrie's New Year's resolutions from 1942, I think, and a bunch of wacky things, you know, and on there was Dream Good. And I thought, that's kind of cool. And it's, you know, has a nice little positive vibe. And so it hadn't been taken. So I figured, hey, I like that. So, you know, and then I didn't have a song called Dream Good. So I decided to write a title track for it.
Right.
So that worked out well.
Much like many indie musicians, you went to what's called crowdsourcing or fan funding. You went through Kickstarter to help, you know, ease the costs of all that takes to produce a professionally sounding record. Talk about that process and you know, just some of the people that helped you make this. Because you look at, you know, the liner notes and, you know, not everybody may know this, but me being a musician as well, I look and there's some really notable and amazing people that were involved in this project.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I first have to say, musically, I had some really great musician friends that played on there that, you know, really kind of hooked me up in a good way, because I've been, you know, making friends with folks for a while, and so I was really lucky to have that. But yeah, the whole Kickstarter thing was kind of surprising in a really good way to me. I have some friends that had some successful Kickstarter campaigns, and, you know, like basically raising money from fans and through donations, and you send out your various rewards for various amounts you donate, that whole thing. And pretty much I had like an amount that I was hoping to get, and that was kind of like just printing up some CDs and maybe getting the mastering done by somebody else, because I do most of the recording myself. In the first day that I put it out, basically probably through the magic of Facebook, because everybody kept forwarding it and it was great, and I made my goal in the first day.
Wow.
So I kind of was freaking out, and then I kind of took it to plan B because people kept donating. So Brad Jones, who's a mixing producer studio guy down in Nashville, has worked with a bunch of bands I love. I had kind of been in touch with him and was going to see if he could mix the record for me. And then at that point we had a serious conversation and I realized I could do it. So that was really great. So it made it way cooler than I thought it would be.
you know, you've been doing this for a long time. You've been, you know, it seems like you've got your Cliff Hillis thing. You've got a band called The Forward Thinkers. You play in a number of acts. You know, people here in the region have seen you on stage with favorite cult, you know, cover band Love Seed Mom and John from time to time. You know, you have a number of musical projects. Talk about your career of doing this and how it's changed a little bit.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. You know, yeah, because I've been playing music so long that when my brother and I, back in the day, when we first started having bands, you know, we would have a mailing list, you know, and mail out postcards to people and stuff, you know. There was no email list. And then now the email list and people don't even want to sign up for that, you know. But it's great because there's the Facebook and all those kind of Twitter and social media. But yes, I mean, we slugged away for many years, and, you know, the original goal was we're going to make it, we're going to get a big record deal, and it's going to be great. And then I realized the cool thing is I've always continued to do things I really like musically, and I do a lot of studio recording, producing, mixing, playing the various bands that I play in. And I've been able to really, I think, get enough songs out there and have them heard by people that I feel like, you know, I'm happy with where I am. So, you know, I kind of realized at one point, it's like, I was probably not going to be super duper mega rock star, but that's fine. Actually, I kind of like it better this way because I just keep doing my thing and I'm really happy with most of what I, you know, what I'm able to be part of.
Yeah. I was having a debate like this with a friend of mine who also plays music, and he seemed to implicate that, you know, the idea of whatever quote unquote making it is, is whatever your goal is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, he seemed to think, and I've talked to many songwriters who think that, you know, that dream of having a guy like Clive Davis walk into one of your shows and hand you a gigantic record deal really isn't going to happen.
Right.
So I guess, how do you balance between what you're doing artistically and what you deem to be making it?
I think that, you know, it's an easy statement. It's certainly oversimplifying it, you know, because everybody's got to make some kind of living, you know, unless you're really, but, you know, yeah, I as long as I feel like, you know, for the most part, I can be creative, which I can. And this is my fourth solo record, and I get it out to people. And I've had a fair amount of luck with some placements, with song placements in some TV shows and some movies. So that's great. So the monetarily, that doesn't hurt one bit. And stay so busy with, you know, all the various things I do. As long as I'm being creative. And even when I'm mixing a song for somebody, I feel like I do my thing. I have my spin on it. I feel like that's creative. So I feel like I'm, you know, achieving something that I'm proud of that wasn't there before I started.
Right. Tell people about, you know, once you create the work and once you make the CD, you know, everything that goes into getting that CD heard, whether it's, you know, social media, whether it's, you know, a campaign to try and get radio play on AAA stations, et cetera. Talk about how, you know, basically after the CD's done, the work just begins.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. And I mean, like, I was a terrible marketing person when I started and still, you know, I have a lot I could do. I actually have to thank my wife because she's very organized and very, you know, helps me a lot stay on track. But yeah, now it's kind of like, especially in this world, you kind of have to be your own record label no matter what's going on, like contacting people, getting your stuff reviewed, getting it, you know, played and whatever. Even if you have no money, you know, you can send stuff out to internet radio and still, you know, find a place where people can really, you know, hopefully if you're saying something and there's people that like it, then you'll reach them.
Cliff, you're going to play us one more song from your record. Tell me about this song and where it came from.
This would be Welcome to You. And I wrote this with my friend Scott Sachs, a great singer-songwriter from the Philly area. And we've been writing a bit together for ourselves and for other people, just, you know, throwing it out there. But yeah, I was really psyched how this turned out, and I figured I'd put it on the record.
Cliff Hillis, thanks so much, man. It's great to see you, and thank you for being here on Coastal Connection.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
We're going to hear one more song from Cliff Hillis. This is Welcome to You from the record Dream Good. You can find it on tallboyrecords.com or at cliffhillis.com. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm Brian Russo.
Sometimes you're so far out from what you know. You need directions from a stranger to get home. You dream of love, but she's right there. You dream of better clothes and better hair. Welcome to you, someone you love to cheat. Sometimes you're in a seat at the symphony, all dressed in blue. Sometimes you are the man.
come to you. Amy Correa is another indie success story. She's a Massachusetts-based singer-songwriter who has been signed to major labels before. But as with many artists, she cut ties with her label. But Correa realized she had a passionate fan base that was willing to help her make her next record, via crowdsourcing, of course. She began a Kickstarter page and raised more than $35,000 to put out the aptly titled You Go Your Way. The record won Best Folk Singer-Songwriter Album of the Year from the Independent Music Awards. She came to the Park Recording Studio in Ocean City back in June. She started by playing an acoustic version of the fiery tune Powder Blue Trans Am.
Welcome to Coastal Connection. It's nice to see you in person finally.
I know. This is great to be here.
So it's been a big year. The last time we talked, you had just put out You Go Your Way, and now you've got a music award under your belt here. Tell me about the Independent Music Award that you just won for Best Folk Singer-Songwriter Album.
This is the 11th year they've given out awards, and there's a jury of musicians and industry professionals. This year, some of the musicians were Ozzy Osbourne, and Shelby Lynn and Keith Richards and Suzanne Vega. So these people, it's hard to believe that Ozzy Osbourne might have voted for my record. Maybe he did. Like, I'd like to think so.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a really nice honor.
Yeah.
It really feels great because it was a self-released album. And I feel like, you know, it's been validated in some way, certainly, by, you know, to have people recognize it in this way. So I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah. I mean, the story of your career is really quite interesting because, you know, you've been signed to major labels twice. But this record you put out very much like, you know, the true sense of independent or indie artist. You did what's called crowdsourcing, where you basically went to your fans and you said, hey, help me make this record. And you raised $35,000 and got this record together in true indie form. Where you are now in your career as you're, you know, doing tours and doing, you know, cities upon cities, not really on a tour bus, as many people might think a touring musician would be on, just more in a car or a van. Are you becoming more fulfilled and are you having more fun now doing this record than maybe past records when you were on kind of the big labels, so to speak?
It's different. It's very different to do to make an album and put it out and then try to promote it without sort of a team of people behind you. And what's bad about it is that nobody hears about it.
Yeah.
But or they do, but it's a really sort of small, kind of slow way because this album came out like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's satisfying because I make all the profits myself. So on that level, it's a simpler thing. There's just, it's just me and a few people that I might hire to help me.
Does it feel less like a machine and more like actual art now?
Well, my music still feels like it has authenticity. I mean, that's never been an issue. And I never felt like on a label that I wasn't true to the music. But I think looking back, I think I had more pressure, even though I didn't realize it, to try to, you know, write something commercial or
right.
Record something in a commercial way. But I think, ironically, I think this latest album is the most cohesive and even accessible in some ways.
Talk about, I guess, the plight of an indie musician really trying to be out there by yourself making it. I mean, I hear from people all the time, there's not as many people coming to shows. It's harder to connect with fans and stay in front of them because there's so many new bands.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're putting something out every 3 or 4 months, you know, they kind of forget about you. Talk a little bit about that.
We are very much dependent on our audience. So cultivating that has become really important to me. And I certainly appreciate it probably more than I ever did when I was on a major label because I just didn't have that connection. So that's to me is the best thing that's come out of this what I call kind of like the crumbling of the music industry. In some ways, I think it's empowering for artists. So I don't think it's certainly not the end. And I would say overall, now I remember your last question. I am more content, probably because I'm also older, maybe slightly wiser, but I just feel a little more comfortable in my own skin. And it feels good to take responsibility for the work that I'm doing and the income that I'm generating. And it just, it's more real, realer. It's not, you know, you get a giant advance and you think, oh my God, I'm really successful. No, you just took a loan from a giant company. It doesn't mean you're successful.
But I guess when you're out playing in front of people now and, you know, at these small intimate clubs, these listening rooms like the Nightcat this evening, I guess what are people coming to shows trying to get out of it now? Has that changed over the years? You know, what people are trying to find in a live performance with an artist?
That's a great question. I don't know what they get out of it. I think for myself, when I go see a performance, especially an intimate one where it might just be a solo artist, I'm really interested to hear their point of view and to connect in some way and to get a bit of humanity. And we live in such a, it feels very corporate to me. So to you know, go to a gallery and look at somebody's art that they made with their own hands, or to see somebody standing in the room with a guitar and just performing without any tricks. Or mm-hmm. I think it makes us feel good. It moves us.
Yeah.
It's fun. It can be touching. It can be so many different things. And I think I as an audience member, and also as a performer, I realize there is such an interplay between the two. It's not just like I'm giving something, the audience gives a lot back. So it's kind of a nice relationship that you can only have in a live setting.
Tell me about the song you're going to play for us next. Where did that song come from?
In this case, of the next song, the poet Mary Oliver has a poem called, oh God, that's horrible, The Wild Geese. And those wild geese fly through this next song. But I think Bob Dylan definitely had an influence in lots of other, it's kind of a traditional.
We're speaking with Amy Correa. This next song is Love Changes Everything, off her critically acclaimed and now award-winning album, You Go Your Way. You're listening to Coastal Connection, and this is Amy Correa.
You can run into these arms, and you can love, you can have love if you want. When you see the beauty you are, love changes everything. Stand up to it when your armor breaks apart.